an idea, because when they come to the carpet, I have a captive audience. No materials, no books, no pencils. We're just discussing the idea that's on the board. And I'll say, now go back to your tables and your work and see if you want to change your ideas at all. Work some more. As you go back to your tables, you should be sitting with your Mario Luigi partner, because we all get tired of hearing the same person all day. Have you ever had that in professional development? You sit with the same group of adults all day and you're like, okay, I'm kind of tired of talking to these people. Like, you like them and all, but you know how they feel. You're ready for a variety of voice. So I do make sure during the class there's at least two sets of partners they can be with. And then I think they should be changed maybe at trimester, maybe before that. As soon as they stop working and kids become bored or uninterested in their partner, it's probably time to switch them around. All right, let's move to our next idea. So our first idea was that building community, right? What does a mathematician do? The next one is structured partners. So everyone has an equal voice in the classroom. This next idea allows everyone to enter in. So this is the idea of opening the problem. And you may have heard this is, you know, obviously trending on Twitter and in math conferences, you know, kind of around the nation. But the saying I say to myself all the time as I start a math lesson is ask more and tell less. In fact, I was just in a kindergarten classroom and this teacher put it up on her whiteboard. She just put it at the top as her own reminder. And so the idea is that every time you're tempted to tell them something, I'm going to ask you to ask them instead. Like, you feel like you want to give them that information. And instead, I'm going to say, so you tell me. And maybe we turn it into a turn and talk or a group, but I want them to own the information. So in an equitable classroom, everyone gets an opportunity to think and to brainstorm and to generate their own ideas instead of having just to replicate or regurgitate my idea. So we're going to promote an inquiry-based classroom where kids have to explore concept, even just for 5 minutes or a few moments or 30 seconds, enough so that they gain interest and now they have some things to say about it. So I'm seeing several things in the chat box right now. Never say anything a kid can say, right? Steven Reinhart, that's his book. We want them to say it, right? If I can tell them, but I know those kids can come up with the idea, I want them to say it. Dorothy, exactly, like notice and wonder. So let's look at some of these examples if you're not familiar with them. So here's a fifth grade classroom I was recently in. And the mixed number was 3 2/5. So you can see a lot of students here working on the floor, but my question to them was, how would you take 3 2/5 and how would you write that as a fraction? So this is the first day of this. I mean, they've done fractions and they've done mixed numbers, but they haven't necessarily done the converting yet, taking that mixed number and converting it back to a fraction. Some people call them improper fractions. And so I just said, so how might you do that? And I want you to show me at least two ways. If I say, how would you do that? I'm going to get kids that maybe just do the algorithm, kids that just write down an answer. I'm going to get very narrow responses. If I say, and at least show me two ways, I'm pushing kids on all levels now. It might take some of my kids a long time just to come up with one way. And that's okay. This is one of those opportunities where I'm providing a variety of options for kids. Everyone can enter in. Just show me something. You can draw a picture. You can use words. You can use numbers. Kids are like, well, we haven't done this yet. I know. What do you think you might do? Show me something. And so when I open the problem, instead of just telling them, this is how we're going to do this, this is how it works, I get kids to enter the problem where they're at. And now my math community knows kids can do this however they want, and I'm going to honor their thinking. So take a look. This is what one of my students started doing. So they started to make this drawing, and I want you to think about it. Maybe type it in the chat box here. What was this person trying to show? So again, it's 3 2/5. What are they trying to show me as they turn it into their fraction? You can see they had an answer right away up in the upper left-hand corner. But now what is their second way of showing me that they know this to be true? So type that in. What do you think? How are they showing that they understand this? Give you a couple more moments here. Yeah, so Kimberly has it. It's counting up all the fifths in 3 2/5. So they know there's three holes. Perfect. Rebecca's got it. Matt's got it. So you can see there's three holes here, three hole, and they are divided into fifths. So they know that every hole has five fifths. Now, they haven't finished their drawing yet, but you can tell that that's how they know that there's really 17 fifths. So as I open the problem and I ask this, I'm walking around trying to figure out the different types of responses out there so that my mathematicians know I value everything that's out there and I'm seeking to understand. I'm also making connections because look what I get next. On the upper left-hand corner, I realize that picture's cut off. But now see how the idea in the right bottom corner connects to the left. How is the left just a step more, step closer to something more efficient? How did it change? Unit fractions. Yeah, Fran, you've got it, right? So you can see it's symbolic. On the right, you can see that concrete, they have to show all five parts. On the left, they're saying, I don't have to actually show all five parts. Like, I don't need to divide up this fraction bar. I can show you that I know it's still a whole, and I know there are 5 1/5 in it. And so as you can see, they're starting to draw all 5 fifths. This is creating an equitable math community because kids know they don't have to have just one way in. But I'm also making a connection. So no matter where you enter the problem, you can see where you might go next. And then I end with this kid. Okay, so you can tell he was doing some other problems there on the right. But on the left, it's a little blurry. But what you start to see is it says 3 2/5, right? And then you can see that he starts to do some of that addition. So it's three, or multiplication. 3 times 5 = 15 plus 2 = 17. And then he puts it over 5. So as soon as I see this, I'm like, oh man, I got someone doing the algorithm. So I said, so tell me what this is. And I'm expecting him just to tell me he understands the procedure here. And instead he says, well, okay, so I know that those three holes, each one of those holes actually has 5/5, but I don't want to have to add up all the 5/5. So I just made it easy and did multiplication. So there are 3 holes with 5/5 in each. So 3 times 5 = 15. And I already have 2/5. So I add my 15/5 to my 2/5 and I get 17/5. And that's the moment as a math teacher that your heart goes pitter patter and you're like, you totally get it. But I need everyone else to come along. So instead of saying, this kid's a genius, are you kidding? I give equal responses to the first two. I'm like, wow, what a good idea. I love that this person is drawing his idea. He's drawing out all of his fraction bars. I love this person. Look at how it progresses. And now I'm asking kids, how are these the same? How are they different? How is this person's method the same as this? He said it's 3 times 5. Where do you see 3 times 5 in the upper left picture? Where do you see 3 times 5 in the bottom right? This is an equitable math talk community because everyone's allowed to enter in with where how they see it, even though I am pushing everyone to the bottom left for procedural, algorithmic, procedural fluency reasons. Everyone's entering with where they see it and making connections. The conversations were fabulous because they didn't feel like they had to talk about it one way or no one way. We opened the problem and there was lots to talk about. So opening the problem means ask more, tell less. How might you do this? What connections do you see? So let's move to what Marianne Small says about this. If you don't have Marianne Small's book about asking good questions, I really recommend it. She does a great job of thinking about how can we ask questions where kids feel like it's open. And she says, a question is open when it's framed in such a way that a variety of responses or approaches are possible. So that's how you can gauge it. If you ask a question, but there's really only one answer, or you say, show me how to do this, and they show you one way, that's not open now. Okay, so show me at least 2 ways. Show me using a picture and words. Show me, right? So by using open questions, students gain confidence that they can't, or they can answer the teacher's question right from the start. If we don't have kids that are participating in our math conversations, and maybe because they feel like they don't have access, they can't enter in where they're at because where we're expecting them to enter is not where they're at. We're expecting something like the algorithm and all they know how to do is the pictures, but we haven't allowed that in our room. So therefore they don't feel like that's an access point for them. So when we open our questions, more kids will start engaging in and the conversation will begin to get richer because now at least I have effort. When kids shut down and they won't try anything, it's really hard for me to move them from point A to point B. So as we move through this idea, I want to show you a few more that you all mentioned. So I'm not going to spend a bunch of time in these because I know that they're prevalent and they're really popular right now. But one of them is just that notice and wonder. I'll give you one example here. Inquiry-based instruction, just how would you, just pose it as a question instead of as a statement. And then of course, numberless word problems. All of those help to foster an equitable math community because everyone gets to enter where they're at instead of feeling like they have to have it the right way, the teacher's way. So it can be as simple as this idea from Dan Meyer. This is probably one of my favorite ideas right now. You may have heard him say this or seen this, and I've just put some images to it. And he quotes it like this, that we're often giving kids an aspirin and they don't have a headache. So think about how many of your kids are showing up to math every day and you're trying to teach them things, but they don't really have a reason to know it, or they don't have a reason for the shortcut, and they keep drawing the long drawn out question or pictures, because why would they need to have a faster way, or their finger counting, or whatever the case may be. And you're trying to give them better options or more efficient strategies. But the reality is they're not struggling with the one they've got. So why do they need the aspirin? Right? So this is the idea. Is how can I give my kids a headache every day so that they want my aspirin? So this is with that inquiry-based instruction. When I pose it as a question, I get them to kind of productively struggle a little bit. How might I go about this? What might I do? So that kids now start to think about how they could or why they need my specific solutions. When I start getting kids like, I don't get it. I don't know how to do this. I know I've got them right where I want them, right? I'm like, I love that you're trying something. It's got to work. How might you do it? Right? So think about how you're creating those headaches. So they want those aspirin. So if I use notice and wonder for something like this, I have 5 2/5. I have to subtract 3 7/10. When I say notice and wonder, sometimes we think it has to be like with a graph or something, just this one problem. So in the chat box, what are things that you just notice without computing? What are you noticing about these numbers or about this problem? Write that in the chat box. What do you notice? Yeah, so someone jumps right away to different denominators. Go even more simple than that. What else do you notice? Yeah, the number above the fraction bar is smaller than the number below. Subtraction. Yeah, so I just had this happen in a fifth grade. One kid raises his hand, he says, it's subtraction. And everyone started to laugh. He said, no, don't laugh. Do you know how many times I wish that you people would notice it's subtraction and they don't notice the operation, right? So this is where people start to enter in wherever they want. I'm going to start with the kids. They're going to probably have some of the more simplistic noticing. So that's why turn and talk is so important here. I can start to listen in and think about the type of responses, because I don't want my first person I call on to say that I have to be ungrouping and regrouping. Okay, that's not where I want to start. I want to start with the kid that says, it's subtraction, because that's where he can enter. And I will build the ideas of the noticing of like, huh, that's probably a good thing to notice. They don't have like denominators. What's that going to mean? Turn and talk. Huh, the fraction on top is smaller than the fraction on the bottom. What's that going to mean? Friends, turn and talk. Before we ever go and start solving this, kids have noticed and wondered several things about this one problem. Your success rate just went way high versus handing this with a page of problems to your kids. And now you've limited access because some kids are like, I can't even do one problem, much less 10. Now is a good time to shut down. When I put one problem on the board, I'm almost creating more equity. I'm really challenging kids to think through it. The kids that need a challenge, right? That just want to race through it. And I'm also challenging the kids that the only thing they're noticing right now is that it's subtraction. And I'm building this idea for them. So that would be one way to notice and wonder. You've probably heard about numberless word problems. It's been around for a really long time. However, I feel like it's really catching some steam right now. People are really excited about it. I've done this for years and years, where when I take the numbers out of a story problem, kids have to focus on what the problem is about, and they can't just focus on the solution. So if you were to Google numberless word problems, you will find a lot of resources on this. This is one where I even leave the question on, but I just take out the numbers. This is creating an inequitable environment. Nobody can solve right now versus the kids that just take the numbers out, plug them together, right? So that limits access to other kids because some kids have solved it before they've even thought about it, and now they've blurted out the answer. This levels the playing field, allows everyone to think deeply about the mathematics. So taking out the numbers would be another way that I foster that equitable math community. Fran Banks, I also like to remove the question. Moving the question is another great one. And then they generate their own questions. What could we ask based on this information? right? So I want kids to think and know that I value their thinking more than I value just the right answer. I often find in story problems, this might be my one little soapbox here, is that students have solutionitis. They are obsessed with finding a solution and they care very little about the problem. So then our teachers, we feel like we're helping and we walk them through the problem so much that we're like, okay, now you're ready. And really we've done all of the hard thinking for them. And the only thing they have left is the computing. And that was never the hard part to begin with. It was figuring out the problem, the solving. So to prevent solutionitis, we cover up the numbers. All right, friends, let's move on. We're going to increase voice opportunities. This is just kind of a no-brainer for me, choral responses. I do think that when we have kids give choral responses, there's safety in numbers. It's the reason we all start singing at the top of our voices when we hear Sweet Caroline, right? There's something about like, even I could be the worst singer on the planet, but when that song comes on and everyone's belting it at the top of their lungs, I join in because there's safety in numbers. There's also formative assessment that happens in choral response. So I'll ask a question. I say, so do you think this number will be greater or less than the number we started with? Friends, thumbs up when you think you know, and I have them put it in their heart box. So if you point to your heart, make a box around it, that's where your answer goes. I think hand raising actually prevents answers, and kids get intimidated and have anxiety about how many kids have the answer and they don't. So just put it in your heart box when you think you know. Boys and girls, on the count of three, tell me, is it greater or less than every voice every day? One, two, three, all voices now, because I'm going to hear mostly greater, but I heard a couple of less. No one knows who said less, but I heard it. And that tells me, oh, we're not all on the same page. Right? Because how many times you hear a voice and you say, so what do you think the answer is? He says seven. I'm like, right, it's seven. Okay, so friends, now that we know it's seven, because I assume since that kid got it, doesn't everyone get it? Really, he got it. What about everyone else? It could be a turn and talk, or it could be a choral response. What does everyone think this new response is? Everyone think about it, think time. Class, and count of three, one, two, three, and answer. And I hear them all and I'm like, oh, we're not all in the same boat. Only some of us knew that. Okay, let me slow it. And I take that information and now we break it apart. So there is safety in numbers. It also allows you to hear your voice. Some of our kids don't talk because they're not used to hearing themselves in the math classroom. There's safety in this. I could even just give you a definition. Boys and girls, a square has four equal sides. On the count of three, tell me what a square has. One, two, three. A square has four equal sides. Okay, it's repetition and it's building language. So let me stop here for just a quick moment. And I just want you to put in the chat box, what's the most meaningful idea you've heard so far? Because I've got about two more that I want to share with you before we take some questions and open it up for some dialogue. But what two ideas are you like, those I can take to my classroom right now and I think it's going to work. So would you just stop for a moment and put that in the chat box? What are you thinking? Yeah, great choral response, ask more, tell less, some great ones. Naming the partners. So many people are like, well, I don't have to name them. I guarantee you gotta. You can eventually let those names go, but it will really help in the beginning. Yeah, removing the question, great ideas. We'll give you a couple more moments to kind of put some more in there. Yeah, great. I love that so many people are trying these out. I love that growth mindset of I'm going to just give it a try. And you know, once you go put it into practice, I'd love to hear via Twitter or email how it went. Anything you got stuck with, right? So even as teachers, we need feedback. We try something. Maybe it didn't go as you designed. Send it back to me. I want to hear about it. And maybe I can give you a next, try this next to see if I can get you unstuck. Okay, let's do a couple more things here. I want to talk about respectful discourse because I feel like this is really important in terms of having an equitable, safe math talk community. And so it says, talk is respectful when each person's ideas are taken seriously. No one's ridiculed or insulted and no one's ignored. And I know that we would say this, we might present it as a norm. There's a lot of work in Talk Moves, that's the book specifically about this and about creating respectful discourse and our rights, responsibilities, and obligations. But I find that sometimes it's lip service, right? So we say this, but it doesn't really happen in our classrooms. So let me give you some examples of this. You know, what happens when you hear the incorrect answer? So you're looking for an answer. You're looking, let's just say you're looking for 7 and you get 10. You call on someone, 10, not the answer you're looking for. You get 11, right? And you're like, no, anyone else? 11. Not quite. Keep going, right? We all do that. Like, let's keep thinking. Okay. So those tend to be our responses, right? So it could be, you know, how do you know, right? I think that's another great response. But generally what I find is that we bypass it. Because it's time. Like, we have pacing. We got to get to it. Like, okay, that's not right. I want to get you to the right one. Nope, not yet. Okay, keep thinking. And instead, I want us to explore. I am more concerned that this kid thinks it's 10 and that kid thinks it's 11 than the kid that thinks it's 7 and is right. I'm way more concerned about the other two, generally speaking, right? So what if we did more than just gave lip service to the importance of mistakes and we spent time exploring them? This has been revolutionary in my math classes. I never used to do this. I really kind of only focused on the right methods, the right way. And that sent very clear messages to my students, because what if you're one of the kids that never, you continually not, don't get the right answer. You continually don't have the right way. That tells you a lot about who you are as a math kid, right? So instead, I want them to be valued, because I will get more right answers when I can understand what they're thinking. So I'm going to give more than just lip service. You know, here's a good definition of value. It's esteemed, respected, highly regarded, appreciated, important. You give time to things you value. So if you don't give any time to the wrong answers, you send a very clear message to your students about what you value. And so you might give lip service to it. Like, I want everyone to be respected and all ideas valued. And guys, we don't make fun of each other. And we think mistakes are important. Remember, it grows your brain and growth mindset. But then every time there's an error, we tend to bulldoze it looking for the right answer instead of giving it the time that it deserves. Now, I can't do that with every incorrect answer, but I need to do it often enough that I change the paradigm. So I change that script. Kids know that she really does invest. She really cares about what I'm thinking. She doesn't just search out the right answers. So I'm going to think about this. I want you to care as much about the incorrect answer as you do about the correct answer, and see what it does about kids' participation and how much more they start to participate. I recently wrote this because I felt like the change has to start with us, right? We're the lead learners in our classroom. We have to go first. But I find that we're probably the most guilty of some of these things. So I want students to take each other's ideas seriously. Well, then I must too. I want students to listen to each other and intently, right? Well, then I must too. How often are you distracted when a kid's trying to explain their work or getting something off your desk real quick or touching base with a student while someone's explaining? If I want students to listen to each other, then I have to as well. I want students to value each idea regardless of correctness. Then I must too, because it's the idea that's worth investigating. It's the idea that's going to grow or become more correct or change and evolve. And that will increase that mathematician's identity in math class. So as I look at this and we start to wrap up, I want you to remember that observations are just professional noticings. So Formative 5 describes it as this. It's deciding how to respond on the basis of children's understanding. As I said to you earlier, this transformed my math classroom. When I started caring about every single answer in the room, I started getting way more participation, and my community of learners exploded in identity and in strength. And here's what I mean. I want you to be Switzerland, okay? Tell your face to be neutral. Okay, so I'm bouncing around the room for different ideas, and I'm like, okay, not 10, nope, not 11. Why do you think that? And okay, no, not quite there. Even if I dive deeper, what do you think? Oh, not sure. Okay, and then I get someone who says 7, I'm like, 7, yes, that's it, friend, you've got it. You can tell just by the way I reacted what I like. And I said, I like the right answer. I don't like the wrong answer. Right? But also your face. My face tells the whole story. How many times have you said something to kids and they said, well, I think that the number is greater than 72. And I start shaking my head no. And I said, are you sure? And my head's shaking no. They change their answer. They're like, nope, I'm not sure anymore. Nope, it's not. It's less than. I said, no, I think that you're right. And I start shaking my head yes. And they're like, yep, that's right. And they change their answer back to right. Their math identity is sucked into mine. So they think that I'm in control over the math identity. If I think they're right, they're right. If I think they're wrong, they're wrong. And instead, I'm going to be neutral. When I get the answer of 10, huh, interesting, let's hold that one. I get the answer of 11. Oh, that's another interesting one. Say more about that. And everything I do is just, oh, interesting. Oh, say more. Not, oh, not quite. Okay, that shuts down thinking. And instead, I get my answer of 7. My face is just as neutral as it was on the wrong answers. I get the answer of 7. I said, oh, that's interesting. Say more. I've treated every answer equitably. Now the kids have to decide, so which one is it and why? You've just heard the defenses. Which one do you agree with? Which one do you not agree with? Because I've responded neutrally. Hold that idea. I want to come back to that. I've treated it with respect. I'd like to hear more, right? How many times you get the kid go to say something? He's like, I forgot. You didn't forget. You lost confidence. You have something important to say. I'll wait. So everything I do with, I've tried to be very, very neutral because it allows more kids to enter the conversation, allows more equitable opportunity, and kids feel like they have, no matter what they say, I'm going to value it and help us to move forward. So, friends, as we kind of come to a close here, we ran out of time and on the perfect slide of just our summary. So here are some of my transformative ways that I hope that you can go back to build into your classroom. Building a strong community of mathematician qualities, create those anchor charts and really stick to them. What do mathematicians do in our classroom? Design and be intentional with equitable discourse, opportunities and structures. Name them, teach them. If your students are not talking to each other and remaining and not having dominators or having equitable conversations, it's because they haven't been taught how to and held accountable for it. Everything we want students to do takes time. You don't allow your students to crawl down the hallway. You don't allow your students to throw their pencils when they have to put them away. If they do that, you're like, oh, that's not how we take care of our supplies. Try that again. Oh, that's not how we walk down the hall. Why don't you turn around and try it again? We're really strict on those things, and we know practice takes time. And 10th graders forget how to walk down the hall. So we know we have to teach them. It's the same thing about math conversations. Invest time in teaching, and you will get a huge return on your investment. Last two is value mistakes. Be neutral. And then be the change. So we have to be those lead learners in our classroom and value and respect all ideas as they come in. With all of these things, friends, I want to open it up to questions and answers and open it to Lee to help us kind of navigate anything else that you want to share or reflect on as we finish our time together.
So if you have any questions for Shannon, feel free to type them in the chat window at this point. I don't think I actually saw any questions throughout your presentation. I think a lot of people just were sharing their thoughts and their ideas in the chat window. So if you have questions for Shannon, feel free to ask them now. And if you think about a question later, you definitely can get a hold of Shannon later at her email address or through Twitter.
Great, friends. So I'll hang out here for a few minutes, but thanks so much for joining me. And I'd love to hear even just one response as you exit out about something that was the most meaningful for you. And go be great.
So thank you, Shannon. And I hope that those of you that are here tonight, if you found these ideas interesting and things that you might use in your classroom, I know I did. I hope that you would actually share them with some of your colleagues and encourage them to watch the webinar. As I said, it is being recorded, or it has been recorded, and it will be posted in about 24 hours, maybe even a little faster than that, depending on how long it takes to get rendered. Just an update on what the presentation is for next week. Next week, we're going to be hearing from seventh grade teacher Joel Bezer about building a badging system. Let your students see math in action. So I hope that you'll be able to join us next week for that presentation. And one last item to note, if you're interested in becoming a host like what I am doing right now and feel like you could do that, we are definitely in need of more hosts. So please feel free to reach out to me. My email address is Lee Nataro, L-E-I-G-H, N-A-T-A-R-O @gmail.com. If you reach out to me, we can get you set up for becoming a host and helping to lead talks and presentations like this one. Thank you very much, Shannon. Have a good night, everyone.
Thanks, everyone. Good night.